Welcome to Red Meat, the conservative news update you need from Odyssey stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in. Could the tip of the spear finally be showing when it comes to President Donald Trump's interventions overseas? Here's a headline about Venezuela that you have to hear from the Mark Cox Show.
Yeah, that's Victoria Coates. We're attempting to get her on the line right now. We got her scheduled from the Heritage Foundation. When it comes to what's going on in the Strait of Hormuz, I heard the president again yesterday talking about the fact that that it's open, that he's moving oil through the Gulf through the Strait right now, and that, you know, I would think logic follows that eventually gas prices would start dropping if that's true. Do we have any reason to believe that's not the case?
No, we have every reason to believe it is the case. So we've got about, according to Secretary Wright, the Secretary of Energy, we've got about 9-10 million barrels a day coming out of the Strait, which is about half of what it had been. But then there are other routes. There are the pipelines, Saudi Petroline, for example, moving 5-7 million barrels a day. So there really isn't a supply crisis, per se, in terms of oil. And we're also pumping record amounts. We may hit mark 14 million barrels a day next month. That's incredible for the United States. So product is out there. It's the security issues that I think are keeping prices somewhat elevated. But I think those, they will start to come down. And, you know, as that sort of transit of the Strait continues to open up. And meanwhile, you know, the Iranians have something like 40 million barrels on the water that they can't sell. Nobody's taking it. You know, they've just got these tankers sitting there, and it's already out, but nobody wants to buy it because they think they're going to be liable to U.S. sanctions. So it's a very interesting moment.
What I've also found very interesting with Iran's strategy here, aside from just stall, has been that they've gone and attacked other countries. You know, you'd think, oh, you'd go after the United States, but they haven't done that as much. And I think Saudi Arabia, right, was one of those that had been repeatedly attacked. And I wonder now, knowing, because I didn't realize that we had been using oil through that pipeline going through Saudi Arabia, do you think that's the reason why they were going after them, was because they know we were using them to get oil?
Now, this was really the most curious decision of the war from my perspective, is why Iran decided to start indiscriminately shelling its neighbors. And it's Saudi, it's UAE. UAE actually took the brunt of it. They've got two Israeli Iron Dome batteries in UAE defending the Emirates. That's an incredible thing.
Wow.
Right there. Kuwait, Bahrain, even Jordan, Egypt. I mean, everybody, Qatar, ostensibly their friend. They've been taking pot shots at everyone. Everybody hates them now, and nobody wants to do business with them. Everybody is lining up, you know, to say, okay, United States, what are you going to do? We will follow you. So I think if you have me on in a year, what we're going to be talking about is how this new Middle East is going to sort of formulate itself and what role we're going to play. And, you know, quite frankly, the people who are nowhere to be found are the Chinese. It's not like they're moving in and projecting power and taking an active role in this. It's entirely the United States now.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I know that you look at a lot of foreign policy issues and national security issues. I wonder how this dispute with Canada plays a role in any of that. I mean, obviously, Mark Carney is quite angry with the United States right now and threatening to counter tariff and all of that stuff. Without getting into the economics of it, I did hear the Alberta Prime Minister pushing back on the idea that Canada would start cutting off its oil flow to the United States. Listen to a little bit of this, Victoria.
And if we cut off our oil entirely, what then? The same results, but even worse. The United States would, of course, respond and cut off all gasoline and diesel from their refineries to Ontario and Quebec, right as we turn into fall and winter. And unlike Canada, the United States has strategic oil reserves that Canada does not. So although their gasoline prices will increase, they will be able to keep them at relatively manageable prices, just as they have done through the Iran war.
I heard our strategic oil reserves are down right now. Do we have enough to sustain us if we were to get into something like that with Canada?
Well, we do. And I think Alberta as a province of Canada is a really interesting case. They're considering seceding.
Yeah.
If we're talking about the 51st state, it's going to be Alberta, and that's the best part of Canada, quite frankly. And so I think that is certainly something to watch. Now, while this is a problem for us, we need Canada. It's obviously a neighbor, a very important country in terms of natural resources, but it's existential for them. I don't know what Carney's playing at. He can't afford this game. He doesn't have the chips to play at this particular table. And there's also a reporting that the United States is in advanced talks with Venezuela to take an ownership role in some of their largest oil reserves. And Venezuela, bear in mind, has the world's largest proven oil reserves. So if we ink that deal with Venezuela, then our reserves double overnight. And so how we then refill the strategic petroleum reserve, you know, it becomes a matter of process rather than necessity. And we do have enough right now to sustain us. We do need to refill that. And I think the president's very cognizant of it. But clearly some of the moves that he's making, particularly the Venezuela move, is pretty much saying to Canada, you know what, we don't really need you anymore.
Yeah.
the way that we used to. And we're not that into you. And, you know, if you guys, I mean, that trade relationship was in desperate need of resetting. So if you guys will come to the table and be reasonable, and my understanding is that the deal that was offered to them was pretty good for them, you know, then we can go back to business as usual. But what we're not going to do is let you freeload.
Yeah, it's true. Donald Trump needs one of those easy buttons Hillary Clinton used to have, right?
that was the reset button. It was, yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. All right. Victoria, thank you so much for your time.
Among the top headlines this week was the blockbuster Meta lawsuit, where they basically admitted they'd made kids addicted to social media. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Big, big settlement with Meta. We're both old enough to remember Big Tobacco and what happened in the 1990s. This case with Meta has kind of been, you know, compared to that to a certain extent. They agree to settle. I mean, look, this seems like a big number, right? $17.1 billion. To Meta, that's a bit of a drop in the bucket, isn't it?
Yeah, and it doesn't really stop other lawsuits from coming. According to these legal experts, more could be coming out of this. You know, they don't want Zuckerberg to testify. They, you know, it's definitely, yeah, you don't want this going to a jury or a judge. You have no idea how it's going to come out. So they took the risk. They write the multi-billion-dollar check. But the question is, did they just put out a good product, or are they intentionally addicting kids? At the same time, did they realize these kids were having in some cases, really hurting their lives, the mass depression, the suicide, things to that nature. Did they know about that? They just have a good product that was hard to put down. And I don't think Meta wanted to explore that anymore. They had some whistleblowers come forward, and it was getting pretty embarrassing for them.
Yeah, and I guess, I don't know how they're going to do this, but they're talking about having 2-hour daily time limits on Instagram and Facebook to, you know, end the doom scrolling, which people do, and then also have limits between midnight and 6 a.m., silence notifications from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m., and these are some of the things that, by the way, as a parent, I do with my 11-year-old daughter when it comes to electronics and make sure, you know, we can monitor when she's on and when she's not on. But look, these kids are smart. They're on social media. They're up in the middle of the night. And it's not good. It's not healthy for a variety of reasons.
Well, we're finding that out now. And you see a nationwide ban on social media up until the age of 16. Now, if you already got it, they said it's easy to go around. But for the 9-year-olds, the 10-year-olds who are never going to be on it until 16, it's, you know, I think it's a good move. And then you have the other thing about AI. AI is going to be the next new challenge. You know, these AI bots talking to you, providing advice to you. Are people going to get addicted to them? Can we at least get ahead of this now that we've kind of had a dry run? I think that's going to be the next thing to explore.
Well, I think so, too. And let me ask you about that, because it was next on my list. I was listening to you on the radio show this morning, and I heard you say something about data centers where I think you indicated that you felt like some people are uneducated on this. And I feel that very strongly. Look, these things have to happen. This is a national security issue, you know, first and foremost, I think. But this data center thing, and I think it's a little separate than the Flock cameras. Both those things have been tied together a little bit. It's really kind of taken on a life of its own, and that's fine. I get that it's a NIMBY thing and everything, but I don't really think a lot of people know what they're fighting against at this point.
Yeah, I mean, people got to use their head. I mean, I want, you know, every community should have a say in it. Are they going to build a mall in your town? You're gonna have a say in that. There's gonna be a referendum, things of that nature. I'm not telling you to knock out local communities and their interests. I'm saying explore it, but understand too the tax dollars they're gonna bring in, the tax breaks probably not necessary unless another state's competing. Then you wanna say, hey, go to Louisiana instead of Texas, and here's why. That's competition between states. That's the way it's always been. That's why California is losing people, and that's why New York is losing people, and Florida is gaining people, because they compete. And what they do is, AOC doesn't understand this, but they'll give a tax break to come in, but then they have tax consistency from here on in. And there's no guarantee it stays at the same level. As you know, if anyone ever bought a house or listening to me right now has a condo. So this is a tax base. And they go, well, it's short-time jobs. Yeah, for 2.5 years, they'll be building a data center.
Yeah, that's big.
And as Rich Lowry brought up today, Rich Lowry says, look, when they were building cars, these weren't beautiful structures. This wasn't a thing of beauty to see as iron workers made the next steel plant, but it was jobs, people in the area. Now all of a sudden people say, well, these are windowless rooms and these are long buildings. Okay, the advantage is cloud storage is affordable. Your phone is fast. AI can happen. America competes. But people are getting so scared. That's what I did on One Nation on Sunday. I'm like, every Republican and Democrat is going, no, I'm not for data centers. I want to put a pause on it. That's the governor of Texas. That's not the governor of Louisiana, but that's the governor of New York. We're going to put a pause on that. Now you have Congressman Rogers competing against El Saeed. He's afraid to come out and say, I'm for data centers. So I think people got to take a deep breath, show some courage, and understand it. Everybody, take out your phone. Who has one? Hold it up. Do you know if we don't build any more, the only thing I guarantee you is your phone charges and your storage will increase. Does everybody want to give up more of their money? Do you not want roads and bridges and brand new schools? Because if you let a data center be built the responsible way, the tax dollars that are perpetual will flow in. They're going to be modernized and they'll continue to grow. So they've been around. Thousands of them across the country were pretending as if they've been ambushed on us. Maybe some were built irresponsibly, but for the most part, you demand they don't, just like anything else.
Yeah, look, I could not be in more agreement with you on this one, Brian. I think that we have to have a conversation, but you're right. There's no political courage. Both sides, this shouldn't be a partisan issue. Let's have conversations about why this is important, why it is a national security issue, why you have to do this moving forward.
Tara Servacius has a unique take on Venezuela.
It was one of those moments I'll never forget because I realized something was deeply wrong. Jeb Bush running for president at the Hamptons. Massive spread, serving the best cuts of steak, food piled high, fundraiser for over 200 key Democrat donors to sell them on the idea that Jeb could be the unity candidate. He meant compromise. Anyway, Jeb gave some stupid speech. There's one part of it sticks out in my mind. It's burned there forever. Three words. Manage the decline. Manage the decline. He was going to manage the decline. He was going to smartly manage the decline. And I wanted to come out of my seat in outrage. The decline of my children's and grandchildren's future? Yeah, it's hip. We'll just manage the decline. Why decline? He didn't say. Manage the decline. The plan even then was for decline, or 10 years ago. It was the plan. Now, he knew that Democrats would love to hear about the destruction of America, as long as they stayed rich. The donors. It was a theme even then. And so we've watched an entire generation of presidents, Bush 1, Bush 2, manage the decline without doing even the most basic things. Obama, Biden, they were actively destructive. Obama, Biden, the most simple, the most basic things. You know, hey, we could do this to really help America. Like that would be in America's interest. No, we don't. Why? At the wine and cheese parties, that is an embarrassment. America is a patriarchy. We don't advocate for ourselves. We don't do smart things. Not us ever. That would be unfair. Like putting our finger on the scale. Yeah, like every other human being since the beginning of time, if they could. Basic human survival instinct, America lost it. But with what Trump's doing now, folks, huge deal in process with Venezuela, in which Trump is essentially saying, hey, like, why is Saudi Arabia running OPEC? That should be us. And OPEC should be regional. Deal in the offing with Venezuela. But their interim government, which is very friendly toward us since they have a gun pointed at their head and all, about taking an ownership stake, America taking an ownership stake in the South American country's enormous oil reserves. The deal, the historic deal would more than double U.S. oil reserves by drawing from a country that has the world's largest proven reserves, about 90 billion barrels. Used to be controlled, by the way, those 90 billion barrels by former Venezuelan leaders, as well as interest once controlled by China. And the Venezuelan leaders were controlled by China very much so. In return for giving the U.S. an ownership stake, Venezuela's government would benefit from private companies, including American firms, developing the fields and returning more oil revenue to that country. So not only are we getting the oil, we'll pay them for it, we're not going to steal it, but not only are we getting the oil, but we're taking it from radical leftists and China. Nice. It's just a simple thing. Like, why should Saudi Arabia run OPEC? Why shouldn't we be the power broker? Which leads to the second news story around this from Bloomberg. Headline, Venezuela has been discussing leaving OPEC with U.S. officials. This comes amid reports that the U.S. is negotiating a deal to take a large stake in Venezuelan oil fields. Some U.S. officials reportedly envision an oil powerhouse in this hemisphere. So this is the Don Rowe Doctrine. Oil powerhouse in this hemisphere built from an alliance between the U.S. and Venezuela that could greatly diminish OPEC's influence. So fingers crossed, OPEC appears to be on the verge of losing its second member in 4 months. And you know what, folks, this, you know, just now spilling out to the public, maybe we make it, maybe we don't. Maybe this works out. Maybe it doesn't. That oil is flowing again to those Gulf refineries, Gulf of America refineries. Not Gulf in the Persian somewhere. And so as it should be. Why? Because the mentality in a swamp for a long time is we don't do anything to advocate for ourselves or help ourselves ever. We just let other countries eat our lunch. That's got to end. It's got to end.
Sometimes you find yourself pairing two words that you never thought you'd see together, like this one. Fart Corner. Here's more from Tara.
Tara, if we don't save the midterms, they ain't going to be no 2028. Text to Ray, hey, Tara, I just had a scary thought. What if Mitch McConnell's wife is filling in for him? South Carolina did it, I'm ashamed to say. Text rates, hey, Tara, the 2020 election, I received 3 ballots from Georgia in the mail. I live in South Carolina. And wait, stop, rewind. Did you used to live? You guys got to give me the details. Did you used to live in Georgia? No. The reason I ask is because the Georgia Board of Elections, the commission had, and I played the video. Gosh, I'd have to dig it up. I don't have it in front of me right now. I've still got the audio. So a guy who had moved, I mean, I think he moved to Arizona or somewhere out west, and black guy, and he flew back to testify that he's been getting Georgia ballots for years. Not to him, but sent to somebody. And then somebody votes for it for years. It's been going on for over a decade. So it shows them mailing him a ballot and he flew in to testify. Look, they mail it. I didn't realize I was still on the list. I don't get it, but I don't know who did. Who does? Somebody voted. Texter writes, hey, Tara, I called Mitch McConnell last night, spoke with him, and he said to pass the SAVE Act. He does. Everybody's talking to him, but no one seems to record him. It's the strangest thing in the era of everything on Earth being recorded all the time. No. You guys. So, no, we don't. You gotta. I love what catches fire here, quite literally. This fart corner. No, I mean, is this a throwaway? Did this teacher down in Atlanta? The kids would say, I have to go to the bathroom. So she'd be like, you know what? Fart corner. She put some aerosol there. She'd point, you know, point and click, turn the rear end. Yep, aim into the corner and then spray. She says she can't stand the smell, especially after lunch. And she's tired of kids missing instructional time anyway. She says it works. They all do it. I was amazed. They're second grade. I was amazed by this, okay? Because, like, if you were the kid who went and farted in the corner when I was a kid, oh, your reputation would be tarnished straight through college. I mean, you had to go to college in another state because they'd give you a name. You know how you get a name, right? Do you get a name? They'd give you a name, and that would be it. You'd be in second grade, didn't matter. By the time you were junior inside, like sophomore, junior high school, you still be, kids would still be calling you by your fart name, whatever they gave you. You can't do that. So I was like, just wait. The thing that they'd never tell you in this article, she says, yeah, they use it. How many? One or two or all of them? Who went first? Oh, that'd be terror in school. When I was in school, but there was shame, though, when I was in school. There's no shame now, I guess. Texter writes, speaking of fire, my late husband told me that his brother farted on a cigarette lighter and a huge flame shot out. Does that work? I don't know. Texter writes, Tara, you know those boys in the classroom are going to have a toot competition in that corner. Also, what happens if the kid doesn't make it to the corner? I don't know. The article didn't say. You know, I guess you're right. The boys might enjoy that. Girls would get a name, though. They would. Texter writes, Tara, this information that's coming out regarding the data centers is just the second wave of the misinformation after the whole COVID debacle. Yes, because that was to advantage China, destroy Trump's administration. Yes, but destroy Trump's economy, shut down all the businesses, shut down the boards of elections so that the Democrats and China could then do election fraud through mass mail-in balloting. And that's what Trump's fighting. Yeah, no, you're right. You wonder why we're talking about data centers. Elon Musk overnight announced they are shutting down, get this, 200,000 highly active X accounts. Many of them posing as, you know, local grandmas who are concerned about data centers. You know who they are? They ain't grandmas. At least not here. Maybe in the Communist Party in China, they're all Chinese Communist Party bots. And they have been using them with people pretending to be locals to fight these data centers. He said they're fake, and that violates X's authenticity rule. And so they've shut them all down, 200,000 bots, with huge reach, having extraordinary impact on American debate on data centers. Why? Well, because National Review put it really, really well. For many years, the Soviet Union, then Russia, financed the environmental movement in the United States to suppress American production of oil and gas. Now the Chinese Communist Party is doing the same. It knows if it wins the AI race, it will contribute greatly to its dreams of world domination, while if it loses, China, with its rapidly shrinking population, could be on the way to the garbage dump of history. So the stakes are enormous. 200,000-strong bot farm pretending to be local concerned people, repeating just absolute lies about water and energy usage of these data centers. And folks, it's working. It has spread like wildfire. I'm not saying data centers are great, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be even stopped in some areas till we figure out, okay, do we have the electricity? Do we have the water? Can we contribute? You know, can we do this? We're going to need some innovation too from the companies that need them. But folks, we can't get left behind in this. Trump is right about that. We will be absolutely dominated by Chinese AI. Every aspect of our life and our culture and our algorithms and everything you see and the perspective it comes from. So good on Elon Musk for detecting that and shutting it down. What? Texter writes, hey, Tara, I was a single mom of three boys. I would drop them off at school, and before my oldest got out of the car, he would say, Mom, I left you a present. Okay, apparently this is factual. We've got a fact check here on the text line. Tara, yes, you fart on a Bic and it's flammable. Fact, we did it 50 years ago. So did you get a sizable flame? You know what? I bet they got this on YouTube. It's all on YouTube.
Thank you for listening to Red Meat, a collection of conservative audio from Odyssey's talk stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in, listen wherever you get podcasts, and smash that subscribe button.